The Spectator magazine combines incisive political commentary with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Stock up on your summer reading with a 12-week subscription, in print and online for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a copy of Spectator columnist Lionel Shriver's new book, The Motion of the Body Through Space, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/Lionel.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. This weekend we saw thousands of protesters take to the streets across the UK for the Black Lives Matter movement. However, there were a number of incidents which have led the news. Boris Johnson has intervened. On Sunday night, he called out the thuggery, which he said had changed the nature of a protest, even though it was by a few. Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, has also criticised some of the protesters, particularly in response to a statue of Edward Colston being pulled down in Bristol, the slave owner. James, are we seeing a change in response from the government in terms of how it is treating these protests? Because last week at least there was a big effort to say they understood why people would want to protest, but anything would have to be done in a socially distanced manner, which it's proved is quite hard to do.
Yes, I think the government initially, its desire was just to kind of emphasise that people should comply with social distancing or they shouldn't go to large gatherings. And I think they thought that saying that they were sympathetic to what the protesters were saying was the kind of most effective way of getting that message over. I think obviously some of the violence that happened at the weekend forces the government to issue a response. Now, I mean, let's take the statue of Edward Colston in Bristol. You know, I think there is obviously a debate about the statue, the context that comes with it. I thought Will Heaven wrote a good piece for Spectator a few years ago about it. It is obviously inherently problematic that, you know, you have someone who made his money out of the misery of others, and yet his philanthropy is celebrated in the way that it is. But we live in a country with the rule of law, we live in a democracy, and you can't have a mob just going around pulling down statues it doesn't like and dumping them in the dock. I mean, that is not the way that our society should operate. I mean, there is a very debatable question about whether it was sensible to allow this kind of lawlessness to take place, or whether the police should have taken a more proactive position. And I think that is what is tricky here. I also think there is a challenge for the government, because the immediate spur for these riots is not something that happened in this country. And I think that makes it difficult for the government, because it is trying to deal with a more nebulous argument than it would be if this was about something that had happened here, where the government would have clearer responsibility for it.
Fraser, the counter-argument here, when you look at the statue of Edward Colston, is something we've heard from a few different quarters today, is that ultimately lots of people had been trying to get rid of this statue for some time by democratic means, through petitions, through trying to agree something, but to no avail. So in a way, if you wanted it down, this was the way it was going to happen. And how many people are actually going to defend or say, you know, the statue should have remained in place, or defend a statue of a slave trader being taken down?
Yeah, we had this argument about a statue of a Nelson. There was Nelson's column in Dublin, which was, you can imagine, not wildly popular amongst Irish people, especially after independence. But it stayed up until the 60s, because nobody could quite agree as to what to do about it, until one day it was blown up at 1 o'clock in the morning. And nobody was particularly heartbroken about it. But at the time, it was seen to be a kind of convenient way. Nobody was injured when it was blown up, and certainly there wasn't any mass demand to put that statue back. But the problem with this is that I think as Lionel Shriver once wrote for The Spectator, to deplore slavers, you need to remember them. And the people do have complicated histories. I mean, Colston was a massive benefactor of Bristol. He poured huge amounts of his wealth into caring for the city's poor. You can see why he was venerated, almost literally, with some of his remains being visited, you know, until fairly recently. You can't quite say, well, it was okay because everybody was basically racist in those days. He was pretty active in the slave trade. trade, there was this Royal Africa Company which was transporting something like 85,000 Africans and went as far as to brand them with initials RAC for Royal Africa Company on their skin. A quarter of them died in the crossing. It's a bit much, really. He isn't somebody you could say, well, by the standards of the day, everybody thought that. No, he was pretty active, really, in one of the most evil trades in human history. So I can certainly see the complications.
And now, the statue could go in a museum.
It could go in a museum. But then again, I am all for people being confronted with uncomfortable truths. I would have put another plaque there, basically demonstrating what he did in the slave trade. And bearing in mind, his statue was there because everybody thought it was great to put him up there. Having a statue there is a reminder, not just that we did have people participating in these evil acts, but we had a society and a culture which basically lionized these people when they spent the proceeds of their money on society and on community. These statues remind us of that. It's complicated. You can get people who have good and evil within them. You can get heroes and villains and people who are both. That's why I tend to be in favour of letting these things stand, but in the historical context.
James, if we look ahead to what events could unfold as the week goes on, as you touched on, the police didn't intervene when the statue was coming down. I think we've since heard from government ministers that there was a concern that were they to do this, more people could get hurt, the statue could be further damaged. But are we potentially going to see, we're already hearing reports, for example, that there are plans to take more statues down, which is seen as problematic. Do you think we're going to see a change in the police response to match the change in government rhetoric?
Where things get complicated is, Edward Colston, right? He was a philanthropist, but his money came, you're not much of a philanthropist if your money came from other people's misery. And if you made your money out of slavery, I think it is quite hard to celebrate it is obviously wrong to celebrate the philanthropy of someone who made their money in that way. I think the issue of statues becomes more difficult when you get into more complicated characters and people who have greater public support, because I think the real danger of public disorder is when you get into a situation where one group of people is trying to pull down a statue and another group of people are saying, no, that person's a hero, don't you dare pull that statue down. That's when things could get properly heated and properly difficult. So I suspect the police will be being told that, but they must prevent certain incidents happening on statues. For example, there was some idiot who attempted to set fire to a flag at the cenotaph over the weekend. I think if that attempt had succeeded, I think things could have turned ugly quite quickly. And so I think the police, need to remind the protesters and need to remind people that we live in a democracy, and that if you dislike a statue or have an issue with it, there are democratic, lawful ways to go about the removal of that statue or changing the context it is in. We cannot just have people running around smashing up things that they don't like, because we are a country that contains multitudes and multiple opinions, and the danger is that the statue that one person wants to smash up, another person thinks is an important national symbol, and that is when things get very fraught and very difficult, and particularly in the context we're in, where most of the country has largely been confined to their own house for the last 3 months. People in that situation, our emotions are obviously already running high.
Now, even without the pulling down of statues, there have been parts of the protests which government have viewed as problematic, and that relates to social distancing. It's the case that you are supposed to keep 2 metres between you and those outside of your household when you are outside. And Fraser, if we look at the various pictures of these protests, that just hasn't been happening in many cases. Do you think that the government should be taking a tougher line on this? At the moment, there hasn't been much of an effort to separate. Or should people be able to just ignore social distancing when they believe it's a just cause?
In my view, the government ought not to be legally enforcing social distancing. It ought to be advice issued to people which they ought to be free to follow or discard as they want. I think the main problem with the Dominic Cummings saga was that the government did make it compulsory. They ought never to have done that. They ought always to have left it to people's judgment. And I think in the vast majority of cases, that would have been enough. So I have to say, when I look at these protests, I don't think isn't it outrageous they're all getting together. If there was rational reasons for thinking that here in London, a city of 9 million, where there are 20 infections a day, that protests in London were going to put other people's health at risk, I might be more worried about it, but I'm not currently persuaded that it does present a significant health risk. I'm also a believer of liberty and a believer of freedom of assembly. If people want to gather together for any cause, I think you need a pretty good reason to stop them. And to say, really, that you've got to stay 2 metres apart, therefore we're not going to allow any protests, to me, that would be a really... it would be taking an already pretty hard to defend a mandatory lockdown and pushing it to a completely indefensible extreme. So I think people are quite right to go out and exercise their right as freeborn Brits to protest against whatever cause they like.
James, what do you think? I mean, there is an argument that it is harder to say to grieving families they cannot attend the funeral of loved ones, even if it is increased to 10, you know, because of social distancing when you have so many people gathering.
The government from before the lockdown was introduced has always known that the lockdown isn't really enforceable in that we police by consent in this country. And if there isn't consent for the lockdown, you can't enforce it. I mean, that's what you see at these demonstrations. The police know that they can't simply move in and arrest everyone who isn't standing 2 metres apart from the person next to them. And to that extent, the lockdown breaks down. And I mean that is obviously a problem because, you know, you give the examples of funerals, people will say, well, hang on a second, why are the police moving in to break up my... this funeral or this picnic or whatever when you didn't move in to break up the demonstrations? I think that is a problem because this whole thing depends on consent, and it's quite clear that after the amount of time you've been locked down for, public consent for the lockdown is not over, but it's beginning to fray as these demonstrations show.
Now, finally, we have a new policy in force as of today, which you will have heard of many times before if you've been listening to this podcast on a daily basis, and that is the government's quarantine policy. New arrivals will have to quarantine or self-isolate for 2 weeks from this point onwards. It comes up for review at the end of the month, and then MPs will get a say. They didn't get a vote when it was introduced this time around. Fraser, how are you feeling about this policy? It seems to be loathed by Tory MPs, loathed by the aviation industry, hated by the tourism industry. But Number 10 do believe they have public opinion on their side.
Yes, and if that's a Number 10 thing you can govern, then you can replace government with some algorithm that will convert an opinion poll into government policy. The point of being in government is supposed to implement what you think will work and what will help the country. And I do think this is a little bit of a weakness, actually, for this particular government. They seem to have not come off campaign mode, not really slipped into government mode, not properly. And this is a very good example. I mean, they have implemented this legislation, they will struggle to get it through Parliament, because by the time Parliament comes to vote on it, which won't be for another couple of weeks, I imagine the number of infections in Britain will be even lower, far lower, perhaps half, perhaps even a quarter of what they were a few weeks ago. And you really struggle to have a logical reason as to why you should have a law which, by the way, makes it impossible for a lot of people to go on holiday. You might be able to take 2 weeks off work, but to take 4 weeks because you're quarantining either side of it, you're basically saying to millions of people you cannot have a foreign holiday this year. And you need a very good reason to do that. You need a good scientific reason. They don't have a scientific reason. The scientific advisors don't back them on this. They claim that they did, but in fact that they don't. And it's also so bizarre that they would be implementing a quarantine now as opposed to when the virus started at the end of March. If you had bought into the logic that quarantine will stop the spread and make a sizable difference, by the way, something which I think is still unproven, you ought to have done it right at the start. But to do it when the virus is right at the end of the epidemic curve just seems to underline the rather haphazard way that this government has so far responded to the crisis.
And James, where are we at on air bridges? Because air bridges, which have been quarantine-free travel arrangements with certain countries, are one way I think you could get to a point when MPs do get to vote on renewing this policy. You could potentially get some support again. We found out today, for example, that New Zealand has no new infections, but yet if someone from New Zealand wants to visit the UK, they're going to have to self-isolate for 2 weeks when it's highly unlikely they would be bringing the infection here. So what's the prospect and the mood in government when it comes to these arrangements?
I think these arrangements will, as you say, Katie, these arrangements will have to exist when MPs get to vote on this at the end of this month, or this policy will be voted down, I think. I mean, it is quite astonishing how many Tory MPs are so hostile to it, either because they don't like the idea of that they think the public might support a quarantine now, but won't thank people in August when they realise it means no summer holidays. But I think the biggest motivator on the Tory benches is not that at all. It's the economic damage that they fear will be done to this country by kind of essentially hanging up a sign outside the country saying that Britain is not open to international business, which it can't really claim it is when it is, you know, telling people they need to quarantine. So I think they will have to get these air bridges in. You know, you'll have to get to a situation where most countries have been okayed and it's quarantined from high risk places only, or I think the vote will be lost in Parliament on it.
And just a last thing on that, James, you spoke about holidays and perhaps people might be able to go away as of next month, depending how this runs. But a lot of people listening are probably wondering, yes, perhaps I'd like to go on holiday, but right now you're not legally allowed to visit your parents and stay over. So if your parents are in another part of the country. So we're hearing the government's looking at relaxing pubs, restaurants, alfresco. Do you think there's going to be much movement on this? Because I think if we get to a situation where you can go to Spain, but not to your parents' house for a weekend, that's going to create a bit of a backlash too.
Yes, I mean, I think don't give up hope of North Berwick. I mean, the biggest story here is that you know, the public still support the lockdown, and there are still lots of people who think the government is moving too quickly. But a larger number of the public are beginning to chafe against the rules than were before.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And while we have you here, The Spectator is open for business, or interns. Our internship scheme is coming to a close in terms of applications by the end of the week. So if you would like to intern here this summer, presumably at a socially distanced arrangement, just Google Spectator Interns 2020 and it should come up.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political commentary with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Stock up on your summer reading with a 12-week subscription, in print and online for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a copy of Spectator columnist Lionel Shriver's new book, The Motion of the Body Through Space, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/Lionel.